Okay, so as you're saying about the coronavirus, it affects us, our site, it affects the psychology of our brain. It's not just about the physical impacts and, you know, people dying and stuff, but it has a mental impact. For example, people are now feeling a lot fearful of life and how life isn't just a big joke anymore. Like things that we took for granted, we are now appreciating more, just like saying hello to somebody down the street. We are now doing that, and it's shocking because before people would just ignore you, and now I find where I live people are saying hello. Are you finding that where you are?
Yeah, no, I'm finding that, like, I live in an apartment building, so in the elevator I'm finding people are much more friendlier, surprisingly. And I think that definitely there's this scarcity right now in human interaction, and people really are desperate to get that human connection, I find, because the coronavirus essentially, especially where I live, has left people indoors, and that's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, like, I'm somebody who's always outdoors. I always go for walks every day because it's important to be out in nature, balance up your energy, the sun, the oxygen. For people who don't really go out, it's like no different to them. But the fact that they can't even go to work will make people realize, okay, well, I can't be indoors 24/7, I need to go out. And they'll start going on walks in their local neighborhood that they wouldn't otherwise have done because they don't have time to do it. And now they've gone on those walks, they'll see like so many different things that they wouldn't have seen, and they will now hopefully start to go on walks just randomly, just for like 10-15 minutes, and they'll feel so good exercising. And we're going to be exposed to the world, we're going to become exposed to nature again, because we've been in our phones, in our heads, on indoors, Xbox, TV. Now we've got no choice but to go out, because otherwise you're going to fucking kill yourself indoors from boredom. So again, there's always pros and cons of shit like this, isn't there?
Yeah, no, and I think I've actually noticed those changes within myself. Like, I find myself being more attracted to nature. Like, I'm going to pick up my bike after we have this call. I have it at a friend's place. So I'm just going to get my bicycle, go on like a hiking trail, like just bicycle on that. So I'm going to spend more time in nature. And I definitely agree that this, like, while this coronavirus is definitely a challenge, it's a hindrance, we can also use this as an opportunity to really explore nature, even like go deeper within ourselves now that we don't have to go outside so much. So yeah, I'm trying to really use this for that.
Yeah, like, that's nature too. Going within ourselves is nature. It's not like you got to look at the birds and the frogs and the cows. We're all part of nature. So, you know, making yourself in harmony with nature, natural, yourself, within. So, yeah, it's all part of the thing. Now we've got more time to think. Like, most people, they're just following what their boss has told them to do all day. They didn't have time to think about, am I happy? Do I really like my husband? You know, do I want another kid? So, yeah, a lot of shit's going to change. A lot of newborns are going to happen as well, and a lot of divorces as well.
Yeah, there might be. I'm thinking about that. Like, I was talking with my mom, because I usually am someone who lives alone most of the year. I live alone in Toronto about like 9 to 10 months of the year, but my mom, she actually has moved in with me with the coronavirus, so I've been having conversations with her, and we're both talking about how the world is going to change so dramatically after this is over. I don't want to get too much into like the details in terms of science, but it, like, just for me on a practical level, like, I am very much prepared for this state to last at least like 6 months. So
6 months.
Yeah. So I'm in this for the, well, I mean, I think that's what the public health authorities are telling us, right? I think that we're like 12 to 18 months away from a vaccine. We don't have any treatments. We're doing clinical trials, but essentially, like, for me, and even for anyone watching this, I would highly recommend that you think about how you're going to use this period of time, because this isn't just a couple of weeks and everything's going to be normal afterwards. We really have this opportunity to use this time wisely and to really see what we can do for ourselves, do for our community during this time. Like, for me, another thing that's important is community development. So I volunteer for Canada Suicide Prevention Services. So at about 5:30 today, I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive to a distress center, and I'm going to volunteer there for a few hours. So I'm also trying to give back. And I think that's also important. And I hope that people can really give back to the people around them, because people are in desperate need right now.
Yeah, like, our NHS people are volunteering. Like, 180,000 people signed up to volunteer. Simple stuff like driving medicine to people, or taking people to the hospital, or people that don't drive, for example. People have signed up, and volunteer work has never been so in demand because people are bored. They want stuff to do. And they might just, for example, apply to pick litter up in their local environment, and they will feel so good simply picking litter up and communicating with neighbors and people who they had no idea existed or lived near to them. Like, they now have new friends in the neighborhood because they both went to the council and they both signed up to the litter picking course. And now they've got new people to pick litter with. They can go on walks with these people. They can have barbecues with these people. We've lived in our own heads for such a long time now. And people should start to see that life is more than just work, 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 work. And if it takes a situation like this for people to realize, then that's just, like, you know, God's universe's way of making people appreciate what's important, which is family, love, and nature. It's pretty much what it comes down to. It's just where we've all come from, outdoors, nature, and from our family. And I think we'll all start to appreciate life more rather than taking it for granted. And things like saving up for the next iPhone, I think people will start to sort of think twice and, you know, hopefully spend some money on things that are meaningful, like taking your family out for dinner.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I really hope that this is a long-term thing. Like, you know, one fear that I have, and this is a fear that I've had for some time, is that I think that a lot of people are going to make some changes during this time, which are not going to last so long. Like, I think that people are going to get more connected to their friends, they're going to be more connected to the family, to their loved ones. People might be more socially responsible. But I feel that after, when this coronavirus is over, I feel like people might just slip back into their old habits. And I hate to be like kind of Debbie Downer with that, but I find that, you know, we really need to focus on making those long-term improvements. Because if we're just reactive, like if we're just volunteering, like think about blood donation, for example. I'll give that as an example. I regularly donate blood, but I can't anymore due to medical reasons just recently. But a lot of people are increasing their blood donations because blood banks are asking them right now because of this virus. But how many of those people are actually going to be lifelong blood donors, are going to be really contributing to that? How many of those people who are volunteering are going to continue that? Because although we're in desperate need right now, we really do require people to step it up and to do that on a more permanent basis, to whatever their ability is.
I think that people follow, and if somebody does something, they're likely to do it. So, for example, if somebody gives blood for whatever reason, and they've got friends, if they said that they've given blood, I do think that people follow, and that friend is more likely to get another friend to donate blood because they've done it. I do think, like anything, it takes time. It takes time when you plant a seed for it to grow and become a tree, for that tree to sprout and create more pollen to create more of those plants. That takes time. That takes like 3-4 weeks. People, I think, will start to change, because I've been saying this for a while, that eventually people are going to get so frustrated with their phones that they don't work, they're too slow, it's lagging, the connection's lost. They're going to get so pissed off, they're going to throw their phone on the couch or the wall, and they're just going to go for a walk. They'll be so angry, or the phone will break, and they'll be like, fuck this, and they'll go for a walk, and they'll suddenly be out in nature walking, and they'll feel so good that they will start to walk for longer and longer. And before they know it, 3 hours have passed because they've been in their head thinking about stuff. And they come back, they look at that phone, and it just makes them get angry. And they would have had 3 hours for the first time in a long time without their phone. That will happen. And then they'll start speaking to people on a walk. And they'll be like, you know what, buddy? You've really made my day. Let's go for a drink. And then they'll speak for another 3 hours down the pub, for example. It's the same for this. People will start to do stuff like give blood, connect to people, help the neighbor, paint their fence, give them a lift, you know, and we'll connect to humans again, to the point where you'll have spent so much time outdoors speaking to somebody that you won't need to go on your phone, because the feeling of difference will now be there. And you can now compare those two feelings. Whereas before, if you've always been on your phone, you won't have that comparison. So now is the time where you have that comparison from speaking to people, and that will create change within 100%. It's just the way it works. You've got to get to the end of the road before you make a change left or right. If you're kind of halfway down the path and you won't really get there. But this has kind of come at a good time in terms of the bigger picture of stuff, you know, like the world and what's happening. We're worried about so much nonsense that now it's like, right, as a human race, we could get wiped at any point. Now it's time to sort of forgive people, let shit go, just love people and stop holding stupid grudges.
No, absolutely. And I think that part of me really hopes that this is an opportunity for that art of lessening the ego, like of increasing human connection. Like one thing recently in my life that I've done is I've been reaching out to people in my past. So I just reached out a couple of days ago to some cousins that I haven't spoke with in maybe like 6 years. And we used to hang out a lot as young kids. And I'm reaching out to people in high school. Like I feel like we're getting so much more time with the coronavirus, surprisingly. We actually have more time. And I feel that that might create more opportunity for social development, for personal development. I feel like there's going to be some people who are like, oh, I'm so busy with work. I've never gotten to play that guitar. But now they're going to pick it up and they're like, wait, I have a few hours here. What can I do with this? So part of me is excited about that. And I know we've been talking a lot about the positives, but there are quite negatives. Like, I wonder, like, where are you based right now?
England.
We're in England, if you don't mind. Like, what's the nearest metropolitan?
Like, Windsor Castle by the Queen.
Interesting. Okay, cool. No, because I've been to London. I've also been to Scotland. It's nice. I haven't been to anywhere else other than London, though. Just haven't been to, like, Manchester, other sort of places around. But I'd like to go sometime. But I can tell, like, the city's probably shut down, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, everywhere's a ghost town. Prince Charles has the coronavirus.
Yeah. And
the future king of England. No, it's true. Like, what if he died? Yeah. That'd be fucking horrendous.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you're right. But I think you're right. I think that, as someone who hasn't grown up in that kind of society, I could tell that the British people might feel very, you know, I could feel distressed about that, perhaps. can I actually ask? I'm actually very curious about this. What reactions have you seen from people about Prince Charles getting the coronavirus? Have people talked about that?
I heard something on the radio saying, why should he get the coronavirus test when the National Health Service people can't get access to it? That's all I heard. Like, it should have gone to them before him. That's all that I heard. Hello? Hang on, stop talking. Disconnected. Continue.
Yeah, so I was just thinking that, yeah, no, that's fair. And I think that there is a lot of lack, not just in the NHS, but in most healthcare systems around the world. I mean, I know that Europe is pretty much, like, especially Italy and Spain, these countries are going to be in a very, very deep downfall, I feel, after this. Italy especially, like, I'm looking at their economy. I'm looking at, you know, I think looking at Italy is very smart for even people who are interested to see what their society is going to look like, because all of us are either a week or two behind Italy. We're not too far behind. So if you want to know what kind of decisions, what kind of choices you're going to need to make as an individual, I would highly recommend that people check out what's going on in Italy, because that's going to help you understand what kind of preparation that you're going to need to make, and it's going to show you perhaps even what society is going to look like and see how you can better prepare for this.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, every business has been shut down, but it'll be for like a good month or so. Everyone's starting again. It literally is like somebody dropped a bomb over a city. You've got to build physically again. Well, now you've got to build, not physically, but I suppose mentally, or you've got to start again, basically. And it's going to be interesting because no one's ever had any situation like this before. And it's like, well, you know, like the usual, the weak won't survive and the strong will. But I think that we're all going to work together to help each other. I think there'll be lots of communities giving their time for free. There'll be lots of donations to, like, local shops and local, like, cafes and shit, if people are used to going there. I think that, for example, cafes will get donations from local people to kind of pay the wages to keep the companies up and running, because obviously they haven't made any money to pay the staff. So they'll, like, sort of give bigger tips, or, you know, to help with the little community. At the end of the day, these communities, we benefit from them. We benefit from the calf. We benefit from the shops. And I think that people will come together. And all of a sudden, you'll see all this money come out of nowhere, which apparently no one has. And they'll be just, and slowly, we will all start to connect. And I do think that this war is going to be a global thing. So many countries are going to be doing this globally. And there's going to be so many, like, Facebook campaigns and fundraisers online to help companies get back and running. I mean, there's going to be so much money given now. I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't like a universal pot, like a charity pot, like, for example, the British Red Foundation, you know, British Red Cross, or, you know, when like there's malaria in another country and people send money to fight malaria, millions are made. I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a Corona Business Foundation thing set up where companies can get like a portion of money to sort of get themselves up and running. I mean, that's that usually happens with like stuff like this, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how people respond.
Yeah, you know, and one thing I guess I'll say is that I feel like you're right. There's going to be like, this is kind of like a war and kind of like the Blitz. And I realized that Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, like her, the head of Germany, she said that this is the greatest challenge that Germans have faced since World War II.
She has the flu, you know that.
Oh, I have no clue.
Yeah, Justin, you know Justin, your Canada?
Yes, his wife's got it. Yes. Yeah, his wife's got it, yeah.
Angela Merkel's got it.
Wow. But, yeah, I mean, to be honest, you and I might have this in a couple of months. I would not be surprised at all, Oliver.
No, I've got a good immune. Very good immune.
Oh, you might not, like, have, like, suffer much from it, but you might still be a carrier. I mean, keep in mind, Iceland just did a study yesterday where Iceland, because they only have about 300,000 people in the entire country, and they're very, very rich, they tested 10,000 people, which is a huge amount of their population. And what they've discovered is that of the people who tested positive, right, half of them don't report symptoms. And a lot of them are very mild, which we already knew. We already know 80% of people who have it have very mild symptoms. So I would just be prepared even for you that if you get it, yeah, like, you could say that right now, but I think I wouldn't be, like, I know that in Canada, our health minister, and I've seen the mathematical models on this, she predicted that 30 to 70% of the world's population, maybe Canada's population, is going to get this. So I'm not, that might be overblown. I don't know too much about the extreme, like, I'm not a scientist or a geneticist or someone who knows how disease models work, but I'm preparing for that.
And I agree that my saliva can carry the virus because that's just how it works. I might not have symptoms of it, I might not ever get ill, but I'm a human being. A plant is a plant, it will catch a fungus disease and it might not destroy itself, but it's still carrying it. Absolutely. It could be stored in my body, but there's just no symptoms and you could pass it on to somebody. Even though I will never really feel it. It's absolutely, yeah, you're right. People are probably carrying it. There's probably more, I'm joking, there's more carriers than there are people actually reported with it.
Yeah.
Even though that may not manifest to any like bad symptoms, but I reckon there has to be. When you think about how one person got it from one person, well, they're around, say, like 8 people. And so it's like everyone that has it, there's 8 that has it but doesn't know they have it.
Oh, I don't think the ratio is that much. I think it's like more of like a 50-50 ratio. Hopefully it's not like a 1-to-8. Like that'd suck if like, because then that would create a situation where like 90% of us have it, but like 20% of us are suffering or whatever. Like that would just be. I'm still hoping for the best. I mean, but I am curious. I want to put this more to a personal level. What are you doing right now in the, like, what are your plans in terms of the coronavirus for you as an individual?
Just go about my day and hopefully it gets over and done with so I can get back to what I was doing. Like, I can't go to London to advertise my podcast and shit. I want to do podcasts in Hyde Park. I want to go sit down in Hyde Park with a little podcast banner saying, come over and do a podcast. I can't do any of that. I've got a billboard that I was going to walk around London with promoting my podcast. I can't do that either. So I want it over and done with ASAP, but to be honest, it doesn't bother me because I'm doing my podcast like I was doing before. I'm doing them, and you know, that's all I've been doing for the last couple of months. It really hasn't affected my life apart from when you go out, there's, I don't know, no one there, and it's pretty much, my life hasn't really changed, if I'm honest. Just been doing podcasts.
That's interesting. I wonder what sorts of conversations and topics do you like talking about? I'm curious.
I like speaking about the stuff that most people don't speak about, stuff that everyone thinks about, but no one speaks about. So that could be something like aliens and and what they think happens when you die, or how what they're scared of the dark, for example, and why they're scared of the dark, and why they hear voices in their head, and if they know what the voices are, why dogs are so understanding, and, you know, nature and squirrels and frogs, and what's a frog thinking when you pick it up. I mean, anything that no one speaks about normally is the stuff I have thought about and like speaking about to people who also think about it.
Interesting. Do you do a lot of psychedelics?
No, I've never done any psychedelic drugs.
Really?
I would do.
That's really surprising. You talk like someone who's done a lot.
See, that's the thing. Most people access this enlightenment. Most people stimulate the pineal gland through a psychedelic drug. I found this awareness just through knowledge. So I didn't have to take the drug to become aware. I just worked it out myself and listened to other people talking about it. And that's how I got there. So I didn't need to take any drugs. I would take them. I mean, I don't know what would happen if I did, because I already know it all anyway. So it's like, would I feel any different? But it'd be interesting. Maybe I will open myself up to another dimension that I don't know exists.
I'm curious, who's your biggest mentor right now?
Oh, myself.
Really?
Absolutely.
That sounds a bit conceited, but what are you learning from yourself? Tell me.
I always question my knowledge, and every time I work something out or think something is something, I always question it, like try and find flaws in it, because I don't want to be right if I'm wrong, and when I'm wrong, I find out why I'm wrong, and then I research the actual answer. I believe that everyone needs to love themselves, and I definitely love myself, and if you admire yourself, you create confidence, and that confidence shines off on other people. And people look up to you and admire you, which makes them encouraged to love themselves, because they see the results of somebody who does and how confident they are and how they can speak to people and how people respond to them. People see that and they idolize it and they want to be that person. So it's not an arrogant thing where I'm telling every fucking person I'm great. I'm telling myself I'm great, but I'm not telling everyone else. But by them seeing how I think I'm great, they'll be like, wow, I wish I had self-confidence like you. And now it goes from you're a negative prick or you're an arrogant cunt to I really respect you, man. How do I be like you? And I'm like, go within, love yourself. So I mean, I admired all these great people to get to where I was, but I've overtaken them now, because all these people are older than me. So you take their knowledge because they're older than me, and because I'm younger, when I get to their age, I'll have all their knowledge and more. So there's no mentors I look up to anymore, because essentially I've learned from them all. So now I'm on my own journey. You know what I mean? Once you get to the top of the mountain, you can only go down unless there's another mountain above. And if you climb up all the mountains in the world, then unless you see another mountain that you haven't been there yet, you would have gone to all the highest points of the world. And that's just life. And then the next generation will learn from you, me, people that are spiritually awakened, and then I'll die, and then they'll rise up, and it just, everything just keeps transferring, you know, like all the plastic go up at the shore, aka just sort of go back to where it came from.
Interesting. I do wonder, do you feel like you've climbed up that mountain? You've hit the apex?
I believe that there's always something to learn, and there's stuff I don't know, but in terms of stuff that there is to know, just imagine that the first human learned something and taught the other human, and they learned something, and then they learned something, and then they learned something, and they shared knowledge, right? Imagine that we've all come from the jungle, and all our thoughts were made up of is food, drink, migrating, hunting, and shagging. That's four thoughts. So any knowledge that I had would have had to come from a human being who came from a human being who learned from a human being. So there's only a certain amount of knowledge you can learn. There's only a certain amount of math you can learn, science you can learn, because that's all come from someone's brain. So when you learn all the stuff that humans have questioned, you pretty much know it all, unless there's new knowledge created. So I pretty much know all that there is to know on the things I want to know about. So I don't mean like maths and fucking chemistry and all that type of shit. That doesn't interest me. That stuff I don't know, and if I learned it, then I'd know it. But in terms of evolution and human and where we've come from and within, and that, you know, I pretty much know all that there is to know, because once you learn from other people who learn from other people, they all know the same thing. And there's only a certain amount enlightenment monks know, for example, like forgive, love yourself, don't focus on it, let it go. Once you know that, there's really not much else you can No, because they all learn from the same person who, you know what I mean?
Well, I think that I really question what you're saying in many ways. Like, I wonder, like, we could all know a lot of things. Like, I could know, for example, that I need to separate myself from negative thoughts, right? Or that I need to go deeper, or that maybe I should be meditating, or maybe I should be, like, you can have lots of knowledge about enlightenment, but I wonder, like, I find, at least within myself, maybe, that there's this disconnect between knowing and doing, and this gap is quite large, and then you Absolutely. Have to do something to jump that gap. So I wonder with you, like, do you find that there are these gaps, or are these gaps very narrow, or is it just closed? Is it just a nice bridge where you just walk over?
So my whole life, I was working out and questioning stuff. My whole life. So I was always in the process of thinking, understanding and analyzing, and there was no action. And then when I was 21, I thoughts into action. So this gap went from like that to like that. But I actually had Tourette's when I was growing up. When I was 10, I was diagnosed with Tourette's because I used to twitch. But twitching is brain activity, stimulating other facial muscles, right? Kind of like a processing a computer. The motherboard's lighting up. And I was on medication for 10 years where it was slowing my brain down, so the twitching stopped. So it's like, wow, these medication works. But actually, I wasn't able to process all my thoughts. So yeah, it was slowing the twitching down, but it was slowing my brain down. And I'd never worked out the thoughts I was trying to work out. When I was 21, came off the medication, I learned all this law of attraction, power of the mind, the secret stuff on YouTube, and together my brain had all the power from coming off the medication mixed with all this knowledge, and I turbocharged into the future. I put all my thoughts and procrastinated stuff into action. I had a psychic reading. I started to do all the things the psychic said, and I put it into the now, and that gap became like that. So all the stuff I preach and talk about, I do. Every single thing I preach, I have done. Unlike most people, they preach what they have heard. They don't have the experience and they don't practice it. But I practice all the shit that I preach. So hopefully that answers your question about...
I wonder, you said that you've utilized psychic reading. How does that work? I've only heard, I know cursory about amount about it, but I wonder what your experience has been.
So when we think... We emit energy vibrations, frequencies, and they are measured. You could measure brain activity frequencies, and on a universal scale, it can travel across the world the same as it can travel to your mate next door to you, the same time. There's just no time frame. So a psychic, they tune into your thoughts, and then they tell you essentially what you're thinking or what you're seeking answers for. So it's like you're a Channel 5 walkie-talkie. I'm a Channel 5 walkie-talkie. I tune in. I pick up what you're saying, and you can pick up what I'm saying. So I'm the psychic. I pick up what you're saying through the walkie-talkie, and I'm saying back to you, you're trying to do this, but you can't do that. Is that right? And the walkie-talkie goes, yes, over. Bloop. It's the same thing. We are all antennas emitting thoughts, and the psychic tunes into those thoughts. You might not be able to access those thoughts because you're depressed or you don't really, you're lost, but this person can tune in. They just have the ability to tune in. Anyone can tune in to anyone's thoughts. Anyone can be a psychic. But the more in tuning well to yourself, the more you meditate, the more clarity you have in your life, the more you can tune into other people. And so she tuned into all my thoughts because I was very, very energetic. I was like, my mind was so active. So my thoughts were very like energetic and powerful. So she or he tuned in to my thoughts so accurately that that made me realize and think, wow, how can this guy do this? And that set me off on a journey of how is this possible? And then I just started, went off on a spiritual journey, ghosts, afterlife, reincarnation, law of power of the mind, afterlife, death, you know. And I recommend anyone to get a psychic, because what a psychic does is it tunes into your thoughts and then allows you to see in clarity what you are trying to get access to. But he does that in a second. And as long as you then take action on his thoughts, for example, if he says you're holding grudge with your father of something that happened when you were younger, for example, that's a sign to reach out to him and forgive him. If you're like talking about like you love your ex-girlfriend, but you're not saying anything, well, that's you're becoming in denial with the fact that you still love your ex-girlfriend. So reach out to them. Stuff like that is going within yourself, which you're running from, but the psychic's picking up on. Because what you're feeling is emitting a frequency. But just because you're not thinking about it on a conscious level doesn't mean you're not vibrating at that frequency. And a psychic picks up on that shit. And if you take action on a psychic, you will suddenly realize that procrastination is now in the present. It just like all the thoughts just become now, if as long as you do them and reach out to these people and forgive these people. Does that make sense?
Wow. No, that does. That does. I wonder, what are your thoughts on psychotherapy? Have you ever utilized that, or would you recommend that to other people? What are your thoughts on it?
What is psychotherapy?
What is psychotherapy? So you live in the UK, so if you're maybe feeling depressed, anxious, or you just want to talk to someone about something, it could be an issue, it could be thoughts, feelings, behaviors. A psychotherapist is essentially someone that you can have a conversation with, and that hopefully there can be some tools and strategies that you can both use through your therapeutic connection to implement meaningful change in your life.
Well, I cured all my issues by simply talking to myself in my head, to the point where I drove myself schizophrenic, like possessed. I was speaking to the voice in my head. I was like, I spent my whole life in my head, right? But obviously that voice is just your own conscience. This is just essentially you talking to you and having a conversation about what is it that you want. So you don't need somebody else like a psychotherapist. But if, for example, you don't have the ability to speak to yourself for whatever reason, you're not a smart person, therefore you haven't got your own knowledge to refer back to yourself with your own knowledge, you need somebody else. Now that could be a friend, a neighbor, a relative, someone online. If they have the knowledge, well, they can question you and say, but why do you feel like this, which then makes you go inside yourself and find answers, then that's pretty much the only reason why you need somebody else. These people who are specialized in it, they know trigger points and they know how to get you to get emotions out, and they say certain things. But a friend and a family, or even a random person on the bench, on a park bench, can do the same. And they just have to essentially listen and ask you questions where you go inside yourself and find reasons why. I went inside myself to find my own reasons why. That's because I already had the knowledge in the first place. But for people who don't have much knowledge, you do need somebody else to ask those questions. Otherwise, you won't know what questions to ask yourself. So having somebody else is crucial. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I agree strongly with a lot with what you're saying, but I find some differences in opinion perhaps that you and I might have. I don't know if it's a matter of intelligence or self-knowledge of the individual that would require, because like, a lot of people, like I'm very glad that talking to yourself, like you talking with your own self-conscious or your own inner voice has helped you so much. A lot of people, I find that when they talk with their inner voice, it just makes them more depressed and more anxious until they find strategies and tools to learn how to, I don't know if it's learn how to talk with their inner voice, but learn how to accept themselves and learn how to do behaviors that make themselves feel just better emotionally, so they can get to that point where they can start talking to themselves in a more positive way.
Yeah, so if somebody's a negative person and they've been around negative people their whole life, then that's essentially all the knowledge you have. So that's negative voices. That's all that you know. So it's going to go backwards and forwards. A positive person, you could say, has outcomes, solutions. They don't procrastinate. They evolve. They manifest. They create. So if they have a problem, they find a solution to the opposite. Negative may not have that. So, yeah, if people... Most people are negative, so they've got negative vibrations, which means no positive, which means no answer, no alternative. It's going to go round and round in circle, and they're going to get more depressed because there's going to be no outcome, there's going to be no solution, there's going to be no question and answer. It's just going to be question, question, question. So you're right. People are just going to go round and round in their head if they don't evolve. Like, they have to go somewhere. You have to question and find an answer. You can't just relay backwards and forwards like, oh, this person always does this to me. What does he do that I don't deserve it? Blah, 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 blah. It needs to be, why does this person do that to me? I don't deserve it. And the other voice needs to say, well, because you keep allowing him to do it. And then the other voice says, well, how can I get myself out of this? Don't be around him anymore. Okay, but if someone's just made up of negative voices where no one has answers, it will just be, why does he do that? Why does he do this? I don't deserve it. And it won't. There won't be an outcome. So most people do that. That's because most people are negative and there's not many positive people out there. That's where you need an alternative force, like a therapist, like a teacher, like a whatever, to who's positive or who is a mixture of both, to give you that other voice, that question and answer.
Interesting. I wonder, what kind of friends do you have? Like, what sort of personality traits do they exhibit or fast ideas? I'm curious about that.
I don't have any friends.
What does that mean? I don't have any friends.
I don't see anyone. I don't have any friends. I don't see people. Yeah. I don't have any friends. I had friends growing up from school and college and like football, but as I evolved, they didn't. We became out of sync. I sadly had to say goodbye to them. And so
every
I don't
single
have
one.
Every single one. Every single
really?
One.
Every really?
Single one. My friends are the animals when I go and walk. So the pigeons, the squirrels, the frogs, the deers, the cows, the donkeys, the horses, the ducks, the swans. They're my friends. The cats, no joke. I'm like Dr. Dolittle, the white version of Dr. Dolittle. They're my friends. I don't have friends.
Wow.
I don't want friends. I just don't have people that I can just call up and do stuff with because I haven't got to that stage in my life where I'm around these people in real time. Like I do podcasts with people around the world who are on my mindset, but I can't just fucking get a flight to Canada for a week and see them. People around me aren't on the level that I'm on. So there's just no people I can get on with that who would stimulate me that I'd want to see again. So I'm best just staying by myself and going to speak to a swan or a duck.
Man, that's so radically different than what I believe. That's totally, that's actually, I might be taking a moment to process what you're saying. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, maybe I can say a bit about myself. I find myself constantly speaking with people who are not maybe on my frequency, or maybe they don't have the same thoughts, beliefs. They're like, we could play this game forever where some of us can say, oh, we're spiritually enlightened, we're awakened, and everybody else is asleep. I know that's a very common refrain, which I don't really like, that a lot of people who are spiritual or more in our community are. But I have a quick question for you now. For you, what frequency am I on for you?
Well, you haven't spoken enough for me to know.
Okay.
Like, you've asked questions and I've answered, but that doesn't really say much about what you know. So I don't know until you talk about what you know. And like, do you know about the law of attraction, power of the mind, the secret, water, the sun, nature, energies, quantum physics, double slit experiment, sex, afterlife? I don't have a clue.
Maybe I can say that I have read The Secret. I've actually read I've read The Secret when I was in early high school, late elementary, so maybe like age 13, 14. I was previously into law of attraction and things like that, but I had subsequently I've disagreed with those teachings, for lack of a better term. And I'm sort of, the more I'm going up, I'm going away from spirituality and mysticism and the idea of the law of attraction, and sort of I'm going more into more concrete and more, I guess, essentialist kind of activities and thought processes. I mean, I just find myself, like, for example, the law of attraction, I don't necessarily believe that it exists, despite having previously believed that. I do believe that we can attract things, of course. I believe that we can have positive mindsets that can allow us to feel a lot of love, feel a lot of energy. Like, I agree with a lot of the outcomes that the law of attraction talks about, but what I don't agree with the law of attraction is the methodology that it prescribes. That is where I feel I have the most disagreement with it.
Define the methodology that you're on about.
So one methodology that is very clear in the law of attraction is this idea that, you know, you're like an antenna. Essentially, the signal that you put out into the world is what you will get back. So, for example, I remember the founder of the law of attraction. I forget her name. I used to know her name or whatever. Like, she wrote The Secret. Rhonda Bryan or something. I don't even know. But essentially, she's like that one time Jim Carrey, right? He wrote a check for $1 million when he was a struggling artist, a struggling actor, and he put it on a ceiling. So every time he'd wake up in the morning, he'd see $1 million check there. And another example could be at someone who wants to lose weight. They actually just, so if they're currently 200 pounds, they put 170 around. Like, they focus on that. I think this can work. I don't doubt that. But I don't think that the methodology by which, I don't think that doing these things is what's making it work, essentially. I don't think that putting the check up and focusing on the check is what got Jim Carrey $1 million. I don't think that focusing on positivity inherently, whether that's for weight loss, whether that's for making money, is inherently going to get you there. And that's sort of, I also find a lot of egoism within the law of attraction. Like, for example, I see a little bit of that within you. And I don't mean to be so you know who I am, man. Come on. We haven't talked before this, but I think you already know what kind of person I am. I see that within you as well. Like, for example, let's talk about genocide, for an example. Are you down for that?
Just quickly on the law of attraction thing, right? Yeah. When I first did my podcast, I decided I need to find people to podcast with, and I decided the night before I need to go to London. I suddenly realized I need to go to London and I'll find this person. So I got on the train to London the next day and I was walking around, went to Trafalgar Square, suddenly got the urge to go back to Leicester Square. And I went up to the busker and I said, do you want to do a podcast? He goes, what about? I said, Power of the Mind, Law of Attraction, blah, 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 blah. This person knew every single thing that I know. And we sat down for an hour and a half and then we had a podcast on the Sunday afterwards. Now, that is essentially the antenna thing where you put it out into the universe. I got a feeling to go to London. I walked around London, came across this person, and then we did a podcast. Now, that's essentially the antenna. He knew everything that I knew. Is that an example of that it does exist? Like, how would you explain that if I was practicing the law of attraction and I did that, knowing it would happen, and it did happen? How would you explain that if the law of attraction doesn't exist?
No, so the thing is, I agree with the result. I think that you got what you were seeking. Very similarly to if I decide tomorrow that, like, one thing that I've done in the, like, I'm thinking of the ways that I've attracted things, but I used to work in political campaigning. So I have gotten lots of great opportunities. I've gone to this one networking event where I met someone who just really, like, a lot of times coincidences will happen. We'll get lots of great results based on how we ourselves are. Like, our desires are. So I don't doubt for a second that you having a desire and a strong attraction towards finding someone who's as spiritually inclined as you increase the probability of you finding that person. I don't doubt that for a second. I think that's just really logical. Like, I feel that if you decided to if you were a thief and you were looking for a companion to rob bicycles with, to use, like, to just clink bicycles off, I think you would have found one too that day. It would have increased the probability, at least, that you would have found someone like that. I'm not saying it would have happened. In the same way that if you try your experiments again, the next time when COVID is not a thing, when it's over, maybe next year. In fact, you know what? Let's do a quick experiment. That day that you found that person, I want you to write down the date that was. And then a year from now, hopefully, if COVID's all done, I want you to go try and find another person like that on that same day. And you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I think it would be an interesting thing to do that every year. But I wanted to talk to you just one very briefly about the comment I made about egoism, because I feel like this is something I wanted to talk about. And I mentioned genocide. Would you be comfortable talking about that?
I don't know what it is. What is genocide?
Genocide would be, well, maybe I'm not, let me just use my sort of rough definition. I'm not going to give you the technical one. Like, essentially, I'm going to talk about the killing of lots of people and just destruction, and how that relates to you and I today in the modern world. So we're going to talk about Rwanda, and we're going to talk about Nazi Germany, if you're down.
I speak about...
Sorry, I think you cut off. Do you mind repeating that?
I said there's no topics on here, so fire away.
Okay, cool. So a lot of people who believe in the law of attraction, they believe that they themselves are an internal antenna, right, that attracts things that they put out, right? And essentially, the idea is that the reality that you're creating internally is what can be manifested externally based on certain techniques, based on certain energy frequencies, how you're, like, does this sound clear? Like, I don't want to misrepresent your side of the argument.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But do you think that what I'm saying is fair to your side of how
Absolutely.
You feel?
Absolutely.
Cool. Awesome. So I want to talk to you about genocide, because I think it's really important to talk about that right now. Actually, you know what? Screw Rwanda, screw Nazi Germany. Let's talk about Myanmar right now. Right now in Myanmar, there are people...
What is that? What is Myanmar?
Myanmar, it's a country. It used to be called Burma. It used to be a colony of the UK. The British Empire colonized this country in Southeast Asia.
Never heard of it, but carry on.
but that makes a lot of sense. The thing is, Oliver, you're not supposed to hear about it. As someone who's from the UK and someone who... you know, who lives in the country that you live in, you know, the United Kingdom and the British Empire, which is a predecessor, has conquered at least like 100 countries around the world, like 106 at some point in time. they don't want to teach you about that. Like, it makes a lot of sense that you haven't heard of Burma or Myanmar, despite the fact that the government that you pay taxes to today has actually benefited from the oppression and suffering of those people in that country, and the resource extraction that not just you, but citizens of the UK currently benefit from. So it doesn't surprise me, but let's talk about it. So there's a lot of these essentially Buddhist extremists that are killing Muslims. And I think at last count, they've killed 30,000 Muslims. People have had to flee their homes. In Nazi Germany, as you know, 6 million Jews were killed. In the Rwandan genocide, 800,000 Rwandan people were massacred. Now, here's the point that relates to you and me. A lot of these people had the exact same, not the exact same, I want to be very precise with what I'm saying right now. A lot of those people, the 6 million people who were killed and the surrounding people who had to bear that suffering, a lot of those people, they may have followed these principles. They may have prayed to a god, maybe, to manifest. You know, one way that prayer, for example, is similar to the law of attraction in one sense, where you're praying to an external deity, right, for some sort of change, maybe in your own life or within yourself, or you could just be praying for emotional reasons. But essentially what I'm trying to say, just to sort of fast forward the conversation, is that these people are now dead, and these people have suffered enormously. A lot of people, even think about the homeless guy across the street from you, do you think that if you taught him the law of attraction, he could genuinely, meaningfully improve his life without external assistance? I'm curious about that.
Without external assistance?
Yeah, so for example, if you met, well, not external assistance, maybe I could just ask that, do you feel that if someone is in a huge place of suffering, they're at a huge disadvantage in life, they're going through a lot of troubles, a lot of anguish, a lot of difficulties, that by learning the principles of the law of attraction, that they could meaningfully and reliably improve their life?
I don't believe that, for example, if I handed a homeless guy a book, that he'd be able to change his life around. I don't think he'd probably read it, right? I think that if you're not looking for something, then you're not open to that path. So if I handed him a book, what the fuck is this book? Read it. He wasn't thinking about it before, right? So he just would ignore it. And that's the same for even Chinese food. If you're not thinking about the Chinese food, you'd be like, nah, I don't want it. But if you're desperate for a Chinese takeaway, you're more likely to eat it. So if he's not thinking about it, he probably won't go down that path. And unless I'm there sort of forcing him down that path, mentoring him or coaching him, he's not likely to learn, read that book and take the actions out. But if he was in a desperate situation where he wanted to change his life, he wanted to get out of his situation, he was praying to God, something please happen. I don't want to be in this situation, right? Because he lost his house or whatever, and he wants to get back on his feet. He would be more open to learning anything and everything. You could hand him the Bible, hand him the law of attraction secret, hand him anything, right? He's more likely to try everything. Let's just say I handed him the law of attraction secret book. Is it enough that he will change his life based on the book, The Secret, without somebody like me mentoring him? Again, if he is a leader or has a mindset of his own, or is somebody who had determination and is driven and trusts him and trusts himself, even though he lost his home and became homeless, yes, he could probably take himself down that path himself. If, for example, he was a fuck up at school who didn't really listen, didn't pay attention, he's homeless and doesn't have much self-esteem, intuition, is a follower, doesn't have his own ability to do what he wants, then he will need to follow somebody telling him what to do, which means he isn't likely to learn from that book. If I, for example, took those two situations and I mentored both of them, could I get them to, for example, back on their feet? Absolutely. Would it be easier to teach the guy who is self-disciplined as opposed to the fuck up at school? Absolutely, because he's saying what next and I'm telling him. Whereas the fuck up at school, I'll have to tell him what next. He'd say why, I'll have to tell him why. Could I get them both to that same place over time? Absolutely. It will take a lot longer for that fuck up at school guy compared to the other guy, but I could, with mentorship, like anyone could, get anyone out of their situation. Does that answer your question?
It does. But here's my question. So that was your perspective. Now I want to bring that to reality right now. Are you willing to do that? So it doesn't have to be a homeless person. We just use an example. Are you mentoring someone right now?
I mentored loads of my friends when I learned about all this stuff. I mentored loads of my friends. I mentored my mum and my dad. I spent 3 years mentoring them. I didn't work for 3 years. I was teaching them all this stuff. And I taught my mum's friend. I taught my friends from work, my old friends from school, because I saw the patterns that they were in. I mentored all of them, like, for ages. I realized that when I stopped mentoring them, they relapsed and they fell back into their ways because they didn't ask for this help anyway, because they weren't at a stage where they desperately needed it. So they could benefit from all this stuff, having a tidy room and, you know, but they weren't at a desperate point where they sort of said, like, tell me, I'll do anything. So they relapsed. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You have to be at the end of the road in order to really take that change in your life. And they weren't, to be frank. And I learned, unless they ask for help, don't teach them, because you kind of are wasting your time, because they're not, as you said, they're not seeking it.
Well, Oliver, I don't think that you need to be at the end of your life to, like, at the end of your rope, or be desperate enough, to use your words, to facilitate long-term change. I mean, I don't know the specifics about anyone you've mentored, so I don't want to comment on that, but I just know that in general, lots of people, like, even in my life, I've made lots of changes in my life not being, like, at the end of my rope, and I see this around me. Like, very few people, when you think about it, are extremely desperate, or are at the end of their rope. You know, like, to just use my finger as a rope, so per se. But a lot of people are not here at the bottom. I feel like a lot of people, most people are kind of in the middle. You have a lot of people at the bottom, a lot of people at the top, but most people are going to be in the middle. And I feel like it's interesting, but, you know, I would love to talk to you another time about that, about your experience with mentoring. I think that'd be a very fruitful conversation to talk about the specific issues that you sort of were speaking with them about. But I wanted to wrap up one.
Hang on, what I should say is that it wasn't a waste of time in terms of when they died, did I waste their time? Because in future, for example, when their marriage breaks down, they might remember something that I said to them. So it wasn't a waste of time, but a waste of time, meaning I had a kind of a plan. I wanted to get them to this point by this time. And if they didn't sort of get complete that thing that I set for them, to me, that was a failure because I couldn't get them to do that. But will they take my knowledge through them for the rest of their life? Of course. So it wasn't a waste of time in terms of their whole life. But what I mean is they didn't have the drive to complete the steps I wanted them to. So to me, it's a waste of time. But in terms of their whole life, it probably wasn't a waste of time. So I agree with what you're saying. It wasn't a waste of time completely.
I just want to highlight what you just said, because I think that it's very important that they didn't have the drive to do the changes that you were talking about. This is one very important thing that I think you brought up, and I think that that's important. The reason why I brought up genocide, the reason I'm bringing up homeless people, is a lot of people don't have this drive. And the reason that it's important to understand that is that that's not their fault. It's not that the people who have a drive like you and me to improve, like, we're some superior beings, right? The reality is that you and me have won a genetic lottery. We are just more conscientious than some people. We're just more driven than some people. That doesn't make us better than them. That just means that there are certain genetics, certain environments that we've been placed in that have pushed us towards being driven. And I think that's important. And the reason I bring up genocide is that essentially the Rwandan kid whose parents were just chopped up into pieces, there's no point for him to write $1 million check or Rwandan francs and to be like, if I'm just going to focus on this, I'm going to be a millionaire. I think that external environments so frequently hinder people from finding their potential, from improving their life. And these external environments, these hindrances, are not self-imposed. The reason why I talk about genocide is a very extreme example is because genocide, suffering, growing up, childhood sexual abuse, like, these things are so frequent in all societies. These things are, like, just trauma in general from parental attachments. There are so many things that are not our fault as individuals that hurt us so much. And I feel like the problem with the law of attraction and with a lot of these sort of manifestation type philosophies is that they do not recognize these problems. And they essentially say that, listen, like the book, The Secret, I actually have it on my bookshelf. I have a ton of books behind me, as you can see, but I also have another bookshelf. Actually, I have two bookshelves in this room, but one of them is my brother's bookshelf, which is more like financial books. But essentially, I lost my train of thought, but essentially,
So you're saying, right, so what you're saying, the thing about the Jim Cherry check, right, what you're saying is true. Just because you write a check doesn't mean you're going to get that film and become, you know, that £10 million contract. But these are just things to get yourself into that mindset. They're like triggers. It's almost like if you leave a dog collar out on the side, it reminds you to walk the dog. If you look at a black cat, it's going to be bad luck. So you now expect bad things to happen. If you go under a ladder, you've realized, okay, I should have done that. Bad luck. If you cross someone on the stairs, if you go over three drains, that triggers off a shit. Now something bad is going to happen. If you write that check on the wall, you look at that, that triggers off a good thing. Now I'm going to hopefully bump into our director. But it doesn't mean because you've wrote that check, you're going to get it. As you said, that is one fact out of so many steps ahead in order to get that contract, learn the lines, promote the film, and get paid. It's just a kind of a motivational, it's almost like a motivational quote on the wall that says, if you want it, you got to work for it. That check is another form of motivation. It doesn't have to necessarily be a check. So I agree. Just because you do that check on the wall doesn't mean you're going to create it. Because if he suddenly wants to become a boxer and he changes career, well, that check means fuck all. In terms of the thing about you can be anything you want, you can achieve anything you want, I disagree with that, because it's more than just having a belief. You need to have more than the skill, the hard work. You need to be able to communicate. You need to be able to get up early. There's more to just, okay, whatever I want, I can create. Okay.
Yeah.
With enough work and enough doing stuff, you can manifest closer to your goals, right? But you can't just think of something and then the law of attraction will make it happen, right? There's so many different levels. There's the law of attraction, meaning frequencies and thoughts. So I think about a friend and I bump into him in town. Law of attraction. That's different to, okay, I want to be in a film, get paid 10 million quid. I'm going to write a check. That is different, because if you can't act, you're not going to even, that's not going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So there's different levels of it. And then there's law of attraction, meaning what I think I will become. So if I want to walk the dog, or I want to go get flowers, you'll get flowers and you want to walk the dog. That's law of attraction. But there's different levels of it. It's not just one thing. When they talk about in The Secret, how you can be anything you want, these are people who have made it. So they're telling you how they got there, right? It's easy to look back and see how you got there than it is to sort of think about anything that doesn't yet exist and then create it. There's like a million steps to create something, but like only six steps looking back, right? So it's easier said than done telling the story. It does work, but it's not for everyone. As you said, if you've got all these issues in your life, they are going to be like suppressing your energy and it's not going to have the same effects. Hence why people like you, for example, are skeptical, because if you set a goal because they said, you know, write your vision, whatever, and you never got that car, that could be, yeah, it's all bollocks, and then you become skeptical. So just because you maybe set yourself a goal or you wanted to be in the Trump campaign or whatever and you didn't, law of attraction doesn't work. Well, if you gave up, it means you were expecting it to go wrong in the first place, and therefore the confirmation of it not happening is a confirmation that it's bollocks. But on the other hand, somebody who keeps going and keeps going and keeps going until they get that deal, you'd be like, it does work. So it just, like, there's no time between whether it manifests or not. There's no time between I'm going to bump into a Trump campaign advisor in 4 weeks or 4 months. It's there's no such thing as time. It's however long it takes to get there. And if you're expecting it to happen within 4 weeks and it doesn't, then it doesn't work. Whereas it might take 4 months. And then if you keep going, you'll say, well, it does work. There's no timing. It's just so many factors have to happen. Like if you get an instinctive feeling to leave the house and go to the bike shop, it might not be because you need a bike. It's because there's somebody in there right now who can help you get that job. And that's the reason why you went to the bike shop. But if you're like, nah, I'll go get the bike next week, then you miss the opportunity. So now you've added another week from when something would have happened because you procrastinated on that thought. Does that make sense?
No, that does. That does. For me, my skepticism for the law of attraction isn't so much based, because when I've used it, it actually has surprisingly worked, especially in high school. Like I realized that it worked, but it wasn't because of the law of attraction. I'm only realizing that now with more of a knowledge of psychology and just the world around us. I feel like a lot of these things, especially the things that we were talking about, I think that this whole idea that there's this law, right? I don't think that that's so accurate. Like, I think that I agree with what you said. I think that it's more of like a motivational thing. It changes your energy. I would be much more receptive to the law of attraction if they were more honest about what it does. when you phrase it as a law, it means it's kind of like the way that the law of attraction people are selling this product or this philosophy is as if it's, and I'm using product very mindfully because they sell it as a product, unfortunately. Like the book, The Secret, Oprah Winfrey, all these people who just who capitalize on this kind of stuff, right? These people, they sell this as a product and they use the word law as if it was like the law of gravity when they don't recognize that, man, a lot of people in the world do not have it as easy as them. A lot of people in the world, it's so hard for them to make these large-scale changes. Like, think about this one thing for a moment. You and I have both read The Secret, right? We've read the entire book cover to cover. I've read it thrice, and you may have read it maybe more, right?
I listened to it. I didn't read it, but yeah.
Cool. Have you noticed that there are no unsuccessful people in The Secret who stayed unsuccessful? Like, even the people who are having troubles in their marriages, even the people who are, you know, like, people who are in distress, that they're all getting better?
So, I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. It's not just like one law. If you do this, this will happen. It's so in depth. Like, there's the law of attraction, meaning if you want to go for a bike ride and you haven't got a bike, you need to go to work, you need to save up, you need to get your bike, and then you go cycling. Yeah. That's the physical law. But then the other law is the unknown of stuff that doesn't yet exist. That's mainly what they speak about, meaning if you want to have a job or set up a company, you need this person and this person, you need this investor. That is attracting something that doesn't yet exist via science, via energy. So you go and walk your dog, you suddenly meet this investor, you go over there and there's somebody recruiting for a, I don't know, a new nurse practitioner. That's the law of attraction, meaning you attract that energy which yet exists. That is the law of attraction. But when they use it in terms of you can become a millionaire, you can create your dreams, have a £2 million house, have a boat and stuff. Well, yeah, that's easier said than done because you need to have a job that pays that much. And most jobs don't pay that much. And you have to go to university and study to get that job. Or if you need £2 million for your house, you're going to have to run your own business. But if you can't run your own business and you're fucking retarded and you don't have any business mindset, you can't sell, you can't talk. Again, that path is ended because you can't run your own business. And if you did, most businesses fail. It takes a long time to set up. The alternative is you get a job. Well, only job's going to pay that much is if you've got a good university degree. So again, all that thing about you want to have this lifestyle, it's bollocks. You can't get anywhere. It's not possible for that type of person. And as you said, somebody who's also, who may have money in the first place or has successful people around them, they can give them a hand up. Those are the stories that you hear. All these people that tell their stories, they've already got money in the bank. They've already got people that can help them. And you can't sell it to every human. We're not all the same. There's different energies of human. There's different biologies. Some people are weak. They're just going to get disease and illness all the time. Some people are positive. They've got immune. They never get ill. Then you've got positive mindsets. Well, they can keep making stuff happen. And you've got negative mindsets where they're expecting failure immediately. And those people, as you said, there's no hope because they're already stuck. It's almost like they're in a hole with no rope. You can't get out. Someone else needs to put that rope there. Whereas all the other people with the stories, they have a bit of rope. And the only way it's a product, as you said, it's about making money. And you can't kind of predict, you can only make money by putting it out to everyone. Okay. Because you don't know who's going to buy it. So you put it out to everyone, and 3 out of 100 end up doing it. 97% of them want the idea of this great life, and they're never going to have it. But the 3% who do it end up creating their life. Well, that's business. Most products that are sold, people didn't really want. It was just through marketing and advertisements that they got it. Nobody, you see a pair of shoes. How often do you buy something because you saw it on a TV and it's just sat on the side, that book on your bedside, for example. It was just like advertised and you buy it and that book sits there. But then there's like probably 3 books that you went out to buy. You've read 3 times. All the other books, it'll be, oh, that's a nice book, but you don't read it. Well, that's business. The whole world is made on things that we don't need. But the people profit from all of it together. The people who gain are the ones who wanted it. Or it's just the step towards them going to where they want to be. But that is just life. That is just how it is. People are always going to fail. You can't make any money unless you sell to everyone. And even if 3% end up making it work and the 97% don't, that's called business. And you can either moan about it if you're aware or do something about it. And, you know, it's business. It's like saying, oh, well, why doesn't the government give universal credit? Everyone's can't survive. Again, if you gave everyone equal money, there wouldn't be such thing as, you know, wouldn't be currency. There wouldn't be businesses, capitalism. Everyone would be equal. There wouldn't be iPhones because no one's going to spend fucking £1,000 on an iPhone. It's easier said than done.
Sure, I would agree with you there. I just feel that, like, the problem, perhaps, maybe, I don't want to continue this conversation for too long, but essentially, if this is my phone, this is here, it drops, that's gravity, right? And we call that the law of gravity. The problem that I have, and this is, I want to talk about the word that I use, egoism, is that you're right, that this might, law of attraction thing, might be the thing that works for 97% of people, but it works for that 3%. Maybe the book needs to be mass market published in order to find that 3%. But what my request would be for people who believe in the law of attraction, who are promoting this, is to really look at the individual's material circumstances and really see what they're going through. Like, for example, in 6 hours, I'm probably going to be talking. I'm going to be talking to a lot of people who are suicidal because I volunteer for Canada Suicide Prevention Services. So I know that I'm going to be in contact with people who, even if you could mentor them, I don't, like, or if they could pick up the Law of Attraction book, I don't see this working out for them. For the reasons you already mentioned regarding the homeless guy and why they wouldn't be driven enough, maybe, or maybe they wouldn't have those challenges in their life. But I feel like the egoism comes when we start to think that we're the chosen people. I'll give you an example with religion. A lot of people who are religious feel that they have a personal relationship with God. And essentially, a lot of people who are in the law of attraction, they believe that they themselves can attract so many good things. So whenever a good thing happens to them, right? So let's say a religious person prays to God that please help me with my job, and they get a promotion. They say, oh gosh, you know, God is here for me, and Jesus Christ is bestowing himself on me. I was struggling financially, and finally I got that promotion so I can help my mom with her medical bills. And this is something that, oh, we're thankful to Jesus or to Allah or to any other God that the individual may believe in. The law of attraction could work similarly, where someone feels that they've attracted this, they've manifested this, so they're very thankful to the universe. You know, thank you to the universe for giving me this. My point essentially here is that we're sort of ascribing, we think that we're the chosen people because these external things are happening to us based on these laws, when if other people did those same things, they would get completely different results that would not be their fault. And maybe this is why I'm bringing up the homeless guy. Maybe this is why I'm bringing up genocide. Maybe this is why I'm bringing up people who are in suffering. Because even if they did the exact same things, if they prayed to your God, like not saying you, but I mean like to the God that anyone who believes in, or they used your philosophy or your methodology, they would have very different results, not because they're a defective person, but just because it doesn't address their circumstances they're going through. It doesn't always work for a lot of these people. And I think that perhaps maybe that is my chief concern with the law of attraction and with a lot of people who push the kind of prosperity gospel that God's going to help you out and give you everything you need kind of thing.
Okay, so what I'm feeling is with you, right, is that you are in the middle, right? You have, you are bang in the middle. So you're frustrated how you can't go there. But a lot of your lifestyle and your friends and family, whatever, are here. So you're next to struggle, but you're next to enlightenment. You know the knowledge and the life you could have, but you've been in this life, so it's familiar. Right? Law of attraction, meaning if there's problems in your life and people always take the piss out of you and they don't appreciate you and they let you down and they're late all the time, if you don't do anything about it, that's going to continuously happen. Law of attraction, meaning if you don't change, nothing changes, right? If you create change, something new will happen. But if you don't change, the same shit will happen. So what you're allowing to happen is the same as putting out the same thing, right? What you are essentially, I think, is you're in the middle. You see all the poverty and all the struggle, okay, because you're close to it, and you want to help because it makes you feel good. And you're looking at the situation of the Law of Attraction Secret through their eyes and thinking to yourself, there's no way these people could do that because there just isn't. They've not got the money, they've not got the knowledge. This guy hasn't even got a phone, for Christ's sake. How's he going to learn the secret? So, and from their point onwards, yes, it's enormously hard to get out, and they probably won't. You, for example, you're in the middle. You can kind of go both ways. For example, it's almost like one trying to find a cure for cancer and getting frustrated about how the government aren't providing enough money and enough funding to provide cures. And all your friends are scientists in laboratories and they're making breakthroughs, but no one's funding them, okay? So you're getting frustrated and you're hating on the world. Well, what if I said that? People only get disease when the body isn't at ease. So if you're around people with problems and issues all the time, that is dis-ease, okay? Because you're stressed and you're negative. Whereas the body at ease is, there's no disease in the body at ease. So you may not have loads of money in a big house, but everything goes your way. There's no disease around your peers because they all know the same thing. Positive mindset, energy, exercise, sun, love, water, forgiveness and harmony. So now all of that poverty and stuff that you are seeing and helping people with doesn't exist. So now you wouldn't feel the need to go back because that isn't you. It's like you're getting sucked back in. Now, I want to help people, right? I want to go to when I've made loads of money, go to London and cities and put them up in a hotel for a month or whatever to give them a chance. I want to go to Africa, make schools and mud huts and stuff like that. But the reality is that you can't play God on every single human, okay? Yes, no. When Bill Gates makes loads of money, he can provide vaccines and shit like that. But the reality is that you can't provide a vaccine for 8 billion humans. And when you make one vaccine, another flu comes along. You just can't play God. And I feel with you, it's almost like you can't get across that bridge. So you stay here and help people because it makes you feel good. In the meantime, when you ideally want to live and be in this life, but for whatever reason, you can't quite get across the bridge. So you're hating on that side, seeing this side as part of you and your struggles, empathizing, but ideally wanting that. It's like, as much as it feels good to help people, people ideally would like to be financially stable, like to have not any diseases, want to be free, and then you can go and help these people. Whereas you're in the middle where you can't quite get there and you see the struggle and you're thinking to yourself, there's no way this guy can, you know, create his life and be an actor and a film star. If I can't, and I have a bit of wealth and I've got a bit of knowledge and I've got a bit of background and my friends are kind of successful. So I get what you're saying. That 99% of the world, they are in that pattern of on the fence and in the negative. And as you said, this is why 3% often make it, because they are kind of 51%, 52%, 53% into the, you know, the enlightenment stage, or they are kind of 75% where their friends and family and everyone else around them knows it. Hence why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It's just science that a positive magnet will attract a positive magnet and a negative magnet will attract a negative magnet. Right, it's just the way it is. You're in the middle, right? And if you keep focusing on, like, you know, law of attraction doesn't exist, then you're going to relapse back into that negative mindset, and all you're going to see is failure and disease and everyone struggling and depression and anxiety, because these people are the people that are trying to essentially free themselves. They're trying to get there, but as you said, these people can't find a way up because they don't have an external force coming in to teach them this knowledge and question and answer them, why do you feel like this? And then they go within themselves and they find answers. It goes round and round and round. You are in the middle. And speaking to someone who wants to help people, I'd say, you know, love as many people as you can. Listen to as many people as you can. They will thank you. They might make it. They might not. They might relapse, whatever. But as an individual, I feel that you want to live this life and you want to make it. You want to be financially stable. You want to free yourself. And then maybe you can go back to these people and help them in a bigger way because you've got more money, a bigger platform. But you are in the middle. And if you don't believe that the law of attraction works, well, you're just going to, that's the law. If you don't believe it works, you're damn right it won't work. If you believe it works, damn right it works. Essentially, you just have to keep going. But as long as your goals are realistic, you can achieve goals, not massive goals like £10 million check on the wall like Jim Carrey, but small goals. It does work. It just depends on the goal that you're setting. For example, if you want to be campaign advisor for Trump, probably not going to work at this time, but for your governor, there's a possibility. And then through going for your governor to your state, to your mayor, you could work your way up to Washington. But you wanting to be Trump's campaign advisor and not getting it doesn't mean that it doesn't work. It's like it has to be stepping stones. And people, they want this big goal and they don't get it. And then they think, oh, it's all bullshit, the secret, blah, 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 blah. And they do what you're doing. You hate against it. But it does work because I get it from both sides. And I see what you're saying. I get it from both sides. I get it.
Well, one thing, Oliver, it's that you're only focused on this law of attraction paradigm. Like, I'm only in the middle of this magnet in your paradigm. I don't see myself being in the middle. I don't see other people who, even like the average, like, think about the average person, right? And, like, Canada, for example, the country I live in, is the seventh happiest country in the world. And there, you can look at the methodology, how they determine that, and like Gallup and how they go for that. But essentially, a lot of people around me are happy who don't believe in the law of attraction. I would consider myself to be quite happy, and I don't believe in the law of attraction. I don't need to conform to this paradigm of positivity or negativity. I just feel a lot of positivity. I feel negativity too. I'm just coming at this with more acceptance and really just like I'm living life in a more accepting way. I have goals, absolutely, but I'm not saying that I'm attracting these goals. I'm just working on them. I'm just like, that's why I started this conversation with saying that I agree with a lot of the results of the law of attraction. I do believe, for example, that if you focus very hard on something, you're increasing the probability that you will achieve it. So I have no doubt in my mind that Jim Carrey writing the $1 million check did help him. For sure it did. I think that having that goal, that motivation, that focus helped. What I don't agree with is creating these laws and creating this whole philosophy behind that one sort of idea. I feel that there's a lot more that's needed. I think that's just like one part. And I think that you and I would agree there that this is just one part of the larger goal. Maybe I've just had negative experiences, even just reading the secret book, rereading it. The first time I read it, I really liked it. I showed it to my mom, showed it to my brother. We all really loved it. But I realized over time, I've evolved maybe away from that and towards a lot of other things in my life that have added value and have kept me on the right track.
Well, we'll say, for example, right, I'll prove to you that it does work. What do you do at the moment for a job?
Well, I'm unemployed. I'm in my bedroom. I'm a psychology student.
Right. So where do you want to take yourself financially, career, job wise, in the next, say, 6 months or whatever, as a perfect choice?
Well, 6 months is probably not realistic. I mean, let's talk about 5 years or something. I think that's much better.
No. First of all, how old are you?
I'm 20.
Right. So what do you want to do for a job? Like, what's your dream? Well, at this moment,
I want to be a psychotherapist.
Right. So you want to essentially have own individual clients, like self-employed. You have your own clients that come to you. Right. So what are you doing that now?
No.
Why? Are you still studying?
Yeah, still studying. I still have years to go, my friend.
Right. So what makes you think that you need to have a professional qualification in order to help people?
I think that there's a few, I'm very glad you mentioned that, because I could technically become a life coach today and just open up a quick practice of that and see clients now. The major reason I find is that I want to know how to, it's not just about help people, I want to know how to help people help themselves. And I want to do that in a more mental health perspective, for things like anxiety, depression, PTSD, even like helping couples. And I find that if I don't get the education, if I don't get the supervision, if I don't have the tools in my toolbox, I'm going to be a less effective helper. Whereas if today I just decide that I'm just going to start helping people, fuck school, I'm going to drop out, then I'm going to be a less effective helper. I'm going to have less tools in my toolbox.
Okay, let me tell you this. All the stuff that I know, I learned through experience. I wasn't taught this. The only way you really learn to swim is to throw somebody in the pool, okay? And they have to fucking swim with us or they die, okay? That's how nature works. Just eventually the mummy chick will fly off and the baby chick will fly off and get the worm itself. Well, mum the chick isn't coming back, right? There's nothing stopping you. And I understand that you want to be more educated. That's good. But there is nothing stopping you from getting real life experience. It's like businessmen, if you go to your business university, they can teach you business, but they can't tell you what to do when a fucking terrorist man walks in the shop and how you calm down your staff. They can't tell you what to do when your shop starts to flood. They can't tell you what to do when you got a load of animals that run in. There's just some situations in life that you can only learn through experience, and textbook can't teach you, right?
Sure, I agree with you.
Getting yourself out there, putting a post up on Facebook saying, hi there, I'm a studying psychotherapist, whatever, I'm looking to get some experience with clients in real life, let me help you. If you're helping them, they don't give a shit whether you've got a university degree or not. You have helped them, Right. And you learn through how you helped that person, and you take that knowledge to your next client. And then the more people you do, the more experience you get, the more patterns you see in other people, and you gain real life experience that, as much as you could go to university and learn all this shit, a situation will occur where you haven't had that situation before. And then what you do is you go into your head and you remember that page 46, when it says this happens, you have to say this. That's called robotic textbook bollocks. Real life experience means you just flow and you listen and you learn and you just help them, and you know what to say instinctively. You don't need to learn what to say. You just will know what to say by connecting to a human. And I think that you shouldn't wait 6 years to get yourself out there, wasting your time. You can learn from experience and learn through the textbook. Like, it's what an apprenticeship does. You learn and you do the physical work. I honestly would recommend you find people and use the law of attraction, right? Vision yourself with three clients. Don't charge them. Charge them whatever the fuck. Three people within the next month. Okay? Law of attraction. Write on your vision board. Put it out on Facebook. Go out into the open. Talk to people. Give business cards, leaflet, poster, whatever. Talk about it. That will come. Three people coming into your life.
Yeah.
That is essentially law of attraction on a smaller scale, right?
Yeah. And I would agree with you.
I think you should do that. Don't wait to qualify. You're wasting your time. Trust me.
Well, I'm already helping people right now. For example, like in 5 hours, I'm going to be helping people already. So I'm not necessarily just waiting. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, I'm actually putting in the work. But I do agree with what you're saying. I do think, like, my friend Kevin, his name is Kevin Singh. He's a sex therapist in Toronto, where I live. And he was actually telling me to maybe think about life coaching. And he's like, you should. He was giving me very similar advice to what you're giving me right now, which is like, you should get started now. But I'm still not so sure if that's where I want to go right now in this moment. I think that one thing that's helping me a lot, Oliver, is that humility. I think 2 years ago, I probably would have been like, I should go right now if I was 18. But now that I'm 20, I'm recognizing that there's some things that I need to learn, some things that I need to understand to be a better helper. And while I will do, like, you could technically say I'm doing life coaching with some of my friends, with some of the people in my community. Like, it's not very formal, but I'm sitting down with them, helping them live their life. Like I've helped a lot of people with, like, issues that they're going through, whether that's a relationship or just sort of with, like, work, academics, just random stuff. So I'm there, but I still think that I need to learn a bit more, or at least be in a different mindset to be doing a formal life coaching thing, as you're mentioning. But I really appreciate what you're saying. I think that's valuable, and I would thank you for that.
So I agree. You have to be in a mindset in order to do that, right? There's no point. That might take 3 years or 3 months. But because I've said that and your friend said that, that now plays it's now on your mind twice as much compared to none, right? So now you're more likely to do it in 3 years as opposed to 6 years. But you have to be mentally ready to do it. I agree. You have to be mentally ready. And sometimes, like, we have things we want to do and it takes a bit of time until we get there. But don't rule it out completely, because that's like not allowing yourself to sort of put yourself in a position where it could happen. It's like you're ruling it out completely. Don't rule it out, but accept the fact that you might need to be in a different mindset, which could be 3 years from now, in order to start life coaching until you qualify. So what you're saying is correct. You have to be in the mindset, otherwise you're wasting your time. You just revert back to doing whatever.
I agree with you. Certainly the mindset is needed. But Oliver, I am actually going to be ending the call soon, but I just want to say thank you for this opportunity to talk. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. I just want to know, like, what do you, where can I find your stuff?
talkwitholiver.com. It's on YouTube and podcast platforms. And at Yes King Oliver is my Instagram. Now you can plug your shit.
My name is Rahan Varani. I'm just a psychology student. You can find me on Instagram with RahinVirani. You might need to go. I said that a little bit too fast, but yeah, you can just follow me and see what I'm up to. But I really wish you the best. And for anyone who's watching this, I wish you the best. I hope you got something out of this conversation. And one thing I'd like to leave listeners or viewers with is take care of yourself. There's some tough times ahead. There's really an opportunity to take care of yourself.
Okay, I'm just going to press stop and I'll say goodbye, okay? Wait there.